Welcome to G.I. Joe Chronicles, Outpost Edition.
I trust your mission was equally well executed.
I want a stone cold righteous attention!
Militarily speaking, it's only fair to say that Cobra Commander is a world-class buffoon.
Welcome to G.I. Joe Chronicles, Outpost Episode 6. I am Jim Meal, also known as Jim the Joe Junkie. Over the course of this podcast, we intend to chronologically discuss the toys, comics, cartoons, and many other aspects of G.I. Joe, a real American hero, which is my favorite pop culture subject. Without getting too bogged down in the details, just my co-host and I having a conversation and reminiscing. Today, we will be discussing 7 episodes of the Sunbow cartoon. Returning to talk with me about some G.I. Joe animation is my brother, George Meal. Welcome back to the Outpost, George.
Glad to be here.
So before we get started, is there a secret mission that has been declassified enough that you can share it with us?
Nothing real major. Just doing my usual hunting for anything and everything Joe related. Various winter sales. They're pretty scarce here in Michigan, but I do my best to find what I can find for you.
Yeah, that kind of rolls into my secret mission. I do this about every 6 months or so. I always go through all the comics that I've added and add them to my collection. I go through them and log them into my CLZ app, clean out my doubles and sometimes triples. You've got a lot to do with that because you send me pictures all the time of asking me if I need one or two or if I've got that one or not. So I'm always collecting the Joe comics from the Marvel run, and I've got a complete run of that. Now they're intermixed with first edition, second edition, newsstand, and direct edition. My mission right now, and has been, is collecting all the first prints, all the second prints, as well as the newsstand and direct editions. And now the newer comics, like the Devil's Due and the IDW ones, I'm working on getting all the cover variants. That's a mission that'll be going for a long time, because some of those variants are pretty rare and expensive. Thanks to you, I've added to my collection quite a bit.
Well, I find them where I can and get them to you, and if you don't need them, we move them on somewhere else.
Yeah, yesterday George and I went to an inside garage sale, I guess you'd call it, in Lansing. And we stopped at a antique mall there also. And actually, I added 7 or 8 from the ones I picked up to my newsstand or my direct edition copies for Marvel. So that was good. As well as some of the Larry Hama written issues I don't have from the different Marvel comics. So that was good. Thanks for debriefing us on your secret mission, George. And so as I mentioned last episode with Pat, we're going to be splitting each year, 1982, 83, 84, and going forward into 2 episodes, meaning we will split the toys from each year, covering the figures in one episode and the vehicles in another. The comics will be covering 6 issues in each episode. Now that brings us to the cartoon episodes. We will simply be covering less cartoon episodes in each podcast. After going through these, I think it's a good thing because there was a lot to cover. We'd have like a 4-hour episode if we were to try and cover 14 or 15 episodes. Now with that bit of clerical work out of the way, let's get started discussing some cartoons in our first segment, Action Figures in Motion.
Now back to G.I. Joe.
Last episode, we talked about the 3 miniseries, The Mass Device, Revenge of Cobra, and Pyramid of Darkness. These were released over 3 years, from 1983 to 1985, with the Pyramid of Darkness being the first episode of Season 1. This episode, we are going to begin discussing the regular cartoon episodes of Season 1. Most of these are single-episode stories, with a few 2-part stories sprinkled in. Most of them have a fairly basic plot, Cobra attempts evil plot, and G.I. Joe stops him. We will begin by giving the synopsis of each episode and expressing our thoughts on the highs, lows, and what does. We are going to call the what does our fatal fluffies. So let's get started with the first one we will be discussing today, Countdown for Zartan, which was written by Christy Marks. Zartan infiltrates the World Defense Center after disguising himself as Dr. Metier. Spirit has suspicions of the doctor and follows him where he meets up with Storm Shadow. As Spirit is fighting Storm Shadow, Zartan proceeds to plant a bomb in the control room. Spirit is captured, but Freedom escapes to warn the Joe team. Once the Joe team arrives, Freedom removes Zartan's disguise, and the Joes place Zartan in a jail cell inside the World Defense Center. As the bomb's countdown gets closer and closer to zero, Zartan reveals where the bomb is located. But Gung-Ho had adjusted Zartan's countdown watch, and the Joes were able to defuse the bomb before it blew up. With some assistance from Storm Shadow, Spirit and the real Dr. Emmettier were able to escape. The Joes defeated Cobra in a battle over the World Defense Center. So, George, what is one of your first high lows or fatal fluffies?
I'd have to say when the Dreadnoks were training the new troops, it wasn't very effective. Also, I found that it wasn't very realistic between, you know, the weapons they were using. And, of course, Storm Shadow taking out the tank with a few punches. That was one of the things that kind of jumped out at me.
I think there's a few options that could have been better, like Firefly or Scrap Iron, maybe. Yeah, that was a kind of a fatal fluffy for me. One of my highs was the tension between Destro and Zartan is continued from the previous episodes, and this will play a part in later episodes as well. There's always that tension between the professional that's Destro and the Zartan, who's the mercenary and just looks out for himself all the time. They relayed that well between the two of them.
Another one of the funny things that kind of jumped out at me or stood out, it was when the troops, when they threw that detonator bomb at Doc and he just caught it, removed the detonator, threw it back. I'm like, oh yeah, that was classic.
That's Doc thinking instead of acting with violence. That's his character.
Yeah, more psychological. Another one that just popped in my head, when Zartan and Storm Shadow broke into the World Defense Center. If Storm Shadow could have broke in, why did Zartan even bother? Storm Shadow was able to bring the bomb to Zartan, so they could have avoided all of that and accomplished their mission. Guess I'm glad they weren't thinking that far ahead.
You could ask that on a lot of these episodes. Well, why didn't they just do that to begin with? Like you said, then it wouldn't be a full episode. Anything before you read the next one, George, for Rocket's Red Glare?
Nope, we'll get into that one here. Number two, the Rocket's Red Glare, written by Mary Screenas. After a mission to stop Destro from developing a new missile warhead, Roadblock and Ricando take a leave and visit Roadblock's Aunt Sarah and Uncle Caleb, who own a Red Rocket drive-in. After a visit from a businessman trying to buy their restaurant, and Roadblock's aunt and uncle decline the offer, Cobra attacks Extendive Enterprises, who are also known for being a Cobra front, has been buying back all of the Red Rocket restaurants across the United States. Cobra announces that they intend to launch and detonate warheads if the U.S. government and G.I. Joes do not hand over the complete control to Cobra Commander. The map that Cobra Commander displays is the same as all of the locations of the Red Rocket drive-ins. The Joes proceed to defuse the warheads that have been attached to all of the rockets on top of the drive-ins, then have a old-fashioned barbecue courtesy of Aunt Sarah and Uncle Caleb.
All right. I'm going to go with a high first. I really appreciated the opening scene where the Joes were chasing down the boy. Not so much chasing down the boy, but why they were chasing him down. Because he had the last component that Destro needed for his warheads. And it brings back and includes what Destro was designed at is a weapons designer. The writers and the producers kind of leaned into that on this up and many of the other ones too in the miniseries. So I really like how they're continuing that through these episodes.
Yeah, I do agree. I like how they're kind of building up that character and re-showing us how that's what he's here for. One of the, I don't know if it'd be a low or what, but when Cobra attacked the Aunt Sarah and Uncle Caleb's Red Rocket restaurant, I thought it was interesting how the whale just managed to ride right up the cliffs like it wasn't even there. You know, I was like, oh, that's not very realistic, but I guess you got to do it somehow.
Yeah, I saw that and I laughed. You know, as a kid, I'm thinking, that's cool. That hovercraft is awesome. You know, the whale's a great toy. But you, like you said, you're looking at it going, that's not how hovercrafts are used. they can't do that.
I don't know if you noticed too, but, and I've probably said this before, how the sound effects, the sound of the, those are the asps, weren't they? That they were shooting at the Red Rocket.
Trailered vehicles. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Okay. The sound of those cannons were the sound of a lightsaber.
Yes. They reused a lot. I know there was some legal stuff where Lucas couldn't stop them from using it for some reason. But yeah, you'll hear the X-Wing sounds come in every now and then. That's another noticeable one.
And TIE fighters too.
Yeah. Yep.
And another one that reused sound was your sea snakes that you like. When Lady J was falling down some kind of crevice, her scream was those sea snakes.
I didn't catch that. I'll have to watch that again and catch that. Yeah, a lot of reuse of sounds. Okay. One of my, kind of goes along with your hovercraft use. At the end, when the Joes were blowing up all the red rockets on the restaurants, it was funny. They would just shoot the red rocket off the top of the restaurant. Like, okay, you're not going to check if anybody's in there or anything like that. And some explosions were bigger than others. The one the whale did blew up the whole restaurant. And another one, it just blew up the rocket. I just thought, that's kind of inconsistent, but okay.
That's funny. I thought I wrote that down in my notes, and maybe it's on a different line somewhere, but I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, okay, well, when they twisted the end off of the one, they're like, oh, you don't want to shoot the end cone or it'll all blow us all up. I'm like, but you guys just blew up a whole restaurant with it on there. That didn't quite work out for me.
And I'm going to roll into another one just because it has to do with what we're talking about. I didn't know Flint was a sharpshooter with a missile, shooting the tip off the one that Roadblock was riding. He really trusting and really, he must be really good with those rockets.
Yeah, I didn't realize that their laser precision on that missile that wasn't even flying straight was that accurate. That was pretty impressive.
Tomax and Zema, extensive enterprises as the financial backers.
Yeah, like when they jumped out of the airplane and the door's just going to fly off and land on somebody. That's okay.
All right. The next one is, I believe we are on to Satellite Down, written by Ted Peterson. Cobra attempts to pull a Joe satellite out of orbit. Breaker forces the satellite to crash in the African jungle to keep it from Cobra. While tracking the crashed satellite, Spirit and Dusty notice Storm Shadow running out of a burning cabin. Storm Shadow escapes, but Spirit and Dusty are able to rescue McIntosh, a survivor from an expedition over 20 years before. The Joes and Cobra both attempt to track down the satellite. Eventually, Spirit, Lady J, Storm Shadow, and McIntosh are captured by the Primorts, who are worshipping the satellite as a god. Working together, the Joe and Cobras escape capture, but not before Storm Shadow shows why he is on the side of Cobra by attacking the Primort children. Lady J saves the Primort chief's son, and the Primorts help the Joes stop Cobra from stealing the satellite. What do you got on this one, George?
This one, I don't know why I always lean towards what's hokey about it or what's, you know, not quite realistic, but I always seem to point out those types of things first. One thing I noticed is how they were all tied up, but yet Storm Shadow still managed to have his swords and his grenades, but yet they all needed help to get out of there. I'm like, well, why didn't he just use his grenades sooner? Of course, then it would have had a shorter show and it would have been, you know, 19 minutes instead of 22 minutes, I guess. But yeah, that was one of the things that I noticed. I'm like, hey, he had his sword the whole time. And I'm sure somebody else had a pocket knife somewhere that they could have pulled out.
I'm what I call no prize at from the Marvel days is the Primorphs didn't know what some of that stuff might have been. So that's why they let him have it. I see what you're saying about why didn't he use it sooner? Why did he wait to get captured to use it? I've got a fatal fluffy about the Primorphs. They're odd looking creatures, but you have to admire how strong and courageous warriors they are. And they were able to take out Freedom and Storm Shadow when they first met. I mean, Storm Shadow was trying to escape, and one of the Primorphs just took him out of that tree limb.
Yeah, they're very experienced fighters, but I guess when your life depends on it every day, you're a little more up to focus on winning the battle.
Yes.
Another one I had, actually, it was kind of a fatal fluffy, is how did that TV work without any electricity?
It didn't last long, though, either, did it?
No, it did not.
They must have left a car battery or something out of the bridge layer there or something.
Something. I was just like, well, how does that work? Well, I'm just reading too much into it, I guess.
I had a low for this one. I try to stay away from the lows because sometimes the fatal fluffies kind of run into the lows a little bit, but I did have a low for this one. When Storm Shadow attacked the Primorphs kids, even when I was a kid, I thought that was kind of pretty low of him. But it was also part of the storyline where, you know, okay, now Lady J can save the kid and help Primorph Chief. But it was like, that was kind of that was pretty low.
Yeah, they could have probably approached it a little bit differently, but it definitely got the point across.
Oh, yeah. Okay, anything else on that one?
No, that's all I got on that one.
Again, some of these seem silly when you're looking at them, but you can dig down into them, and they've got pretty good stories. They get the point across on some of the stuff, but pretty much we've discussed before a commercial. So they included a lot of different characters and vehicles. The bridge layer was pushed for these couple episodes and kind of showed up in almost every single one of these, didn't he?
All but one of them that I pointed out later, I will find out that he should have been in. It gets back to your highs, your lows, your fatal fluffies. I have trouble finding pinpoint the highs because I like them all so much. that, okay, well, what do I point out? It's easier for me to say, okay, what's kind of hokey about it? Because I still love them all, but I try to pick out the oddities of them is where I approach these.
You got to look at the time, too. It was 1980s.
We didn't have 1,400 channels to take 4 hours to figure out what we wanted to watch. You know, we just said, oh, this is on. This is what we're watching.
Next one's yours, I think, George.
That it is. Number four, The Cobra Stops the World, written by Steve Gerber. Cobra, in another attempt to take over the world, demonstrates their ability to attack anywhere in the world by bouncing an energy ray of a satellite. Cobra Commander gives the world an ultimatum to submit, or he will begin destroying the world's fuel sources. G.I. Joe begins immediately to search out and find Cobra Base to stop Cobra, Deep Six, and Torpedo attack and sink a Cobra Sea Base. Scarlet interrogates a group of Cobra troopers on location of a Cobra base. Duke and Ace are shot down, where they are captured by Major Blood and a local tribe. Sparks works on a way to track Cobra before the next transmission. As Cobra transmits and destroys another oil tanker, Sparks is able to pinpoint the location of Cobra base. Ace and Duke escape in a stolen Cobra Rattler. They, along with the entire Joe team, attack a Cobra base, and as usual, Cobra Commander and Destro escape to try and take over the world another day. All right, before we get started, who is Sparks? I've never heard of him.
That's a good question. Sparks was a character that was created for the cartoon show. He wasn't used in any Marvel G.I. Joe comic. He had a large part in the America's Elite comic series by Devil's Due, and there's only one or two figures made of him. So very limited use in any media.
Okay. Yeah, that's why I'm like, he looks a lot like a cross between Clutch and Dial Tone, but yet he's a computer guy. Why wouldn't they just put Dial Tone in there? I wonder if it was one that they intended to release and it never happened, or...
I'd like to do some more research on that before I say what it was, but yeah, I just know him as he was a cartoon character and that was it. And he's interesting because you would think when 86 came around, when Dial Tone or Mainframe was created, they would have just created a Sparks figure instead of Mainframe. That's where he's from, just a cartoon character that they used to fill a role. Okay, good question. I wondered if that would come up or not. My first high is this episode was written by an already well-established writer in the comic book industry, Steve Gerber, who wrote many titles for Marvel, including Man-Thing, and he also was the creator of Howard the Duck. As we go through this entire, you know, these cartoons, there's going to be names that you recognize. In the next episode, there's one that is just starting out his career. But this one, he's already been established. He's already been writing comics for a while. And you can almost tell that this episode was a little bit, had the pacing of a comic book. I could see it once. I'm like, yeah, I could see this written by a comic creator. So that was my first high was, comic writer Steve Gerber wrote it. You didn't know that as a kid. You didn't recognize it.
Now that we're older and we look into that stuff a little bit more, you know, we realize how many different things these guys wrote or drew for. They weren't one hit wonders. They were in a lot of different directions. That's something you learn later on in life, I guess.
That's one of the things, you know, like the voice of Cobra Commander. Maybe as kids we recognized him as the voice of Starscream. I don't know. It's like sounded alike, but then you get to looking at it and he did so many other voices in other cartoons. The same with Optimus Prime's voice. You look at it, he did some characters in Smurfs and some other ones that you don't think about.
Yeah. I don't think as kids, we paid that close attention to it. And we just, you know, not at all. But even in this day and age, you know, like even, you know, Family Guy's got how many people do so many different voices and the Simpsons, and it's all the same. What, didn't yep. Jim Henson do all the different voices for most of the Muppets he was doing?
Oh, I'm sure he did.
So, yeah, one of the things that I noticed and that that floating sea base looked an awful lot like a pterodrome, except for it had a clear roof and a roller coaster in it. At least it looked like a roller coaster to me. I'm sure it was just like dome supports or something. But
some big dome Cedar Point or something.
Yeah, it's the number one cold vacation destination.
They got to have somewhere to go to relax. I mean, having Cobra Commander yell at you all the time has got to be some kind of relaxation going on.
You got to have your stress relief somewhere. That's for sure.
And another high, speaking of your dome, had to do with this. I really like the banter between Torpedo and Deep Six.
Oh, yeah.
Two different personalities, and they played off each other so well.
Yeah, they're like a couple of brothers is what they are. They're bickering back and forth all the time. And yeah, I think the jokes were more a Torpedo side than Deep Six. So I'm sure we know who can relate to that.
No, not at all. I mean, there's no relation between the two of us or those two at all. What else you got, George?
Another one that I kind of scratched my head on that, you know, even after they got rid of the detonator, so no more tankers blew up and all that stuff. Okay, how did they find the tankers? They still didn't know where they were. Did the cloaking device make them visible, or were they just hoping they showed up somewhere? Or they found them somehow, but they didn't tell us how they found them.
My last one. Before, you saw how Scarlet was always a confident fighter and this and that. In this episode, she's a bad. The way she kicks those Cobra Troopers' butts in that house, she was amazing. I love that scene.
Yeah, that was a good fight scene. Granted, she caught him a little bit on by surprise, but she definitely showed him who the boss was. The one thing was the guy that had the plate of food. And I'm like, what the heck is that around his face? I didn't realize it was this mask that he pulled up above his nose so that he could eat.
Yeah.
I'm like, because to me, I would just pull it down around my neck. But whatever, I guess you do you.
All right. You got anything else for Cobra Stops the World?
And that's all I've got.
Okay. I got one more. I got to say it, because it's going to roll into something we're going to talk about later. Everyone jokes about how many times Duke gets captured, which we'll discuss later. But how many times does Ace get shot down? He's supposed to be the expert pilot, and I think he trashes more Sky Strikers than any of the other characters.
Yeah, but does that mean, is that because he's in the sky more than the other guys are, so he gets shot down more? You know, his flight to kill ratios are probably higher than everybody else's, and we all know his name's not Ace because he's a really good pilot.
Good point. Also in this episode, he flies a different type of aircraft, so he can adapt in that aspect too. So I just thought it was funny because seems he gets shot down a lot. He's good at what he does.
He did establish that his Sky Striker ratio getting shot down is much higher than his Rattler being shot down ratio. Because I don't know how many times he steals his Rattler. He doesn't hardly ever get shot down in those.
Maybe he should be flying those more often.
Has he ever flown any of the other aircraft that we've seen? It's always either a Sky Striker or a Rattler. I've never seen him fly any of the other stuff.
He doesn't fly helicopters or anything like Wild Bill does. So
yeah, Wild Bill flies a lot more oddball stuff than he does. Yep. Even Shipwreck does.
They all fly Sky Strikers.
Yeah, yep, they all do, no matter
even
what.
Even Mutt, one time, or Junkyard later on. Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next one called Jungle Trap, written by Paul Dini. Duke, Scarlet, Rock and Roll, and Rakondo are to meet up with Dr. Shakur in Egypt. Cobra agents, including Zartan and the Dreadnoks, set a trap to capture Dr. Shakur. Cobra accomplishes their goal and captures Dr. Shakur, though Joes are able to escape thanks to Snake Eyes. Cobra uses mind control, forcing Dr. Shakur to build his Vulcan machine, a device that, when pointed to the Earth's core, brings lava to the surface. Rakondo had heard rumors of a Cobra cult located in the jungle, so the Joes attempt to rescue Dr. Shakur, but in doing so, Rock and Roll, Duke, Scarlet, Snake Eyes, and Rakondo are shot down and stranded in the jungle. The Joes begin to make their way to the Cobra Temple, but have to avoid all of the traps set by Cobra, which include pits with spikes in them, laser guns, and a mad rhino. The Joes get to the Cobra Temple by disguising themselves as Cobra Troopers and hijacking a Cobra water moccasin. The Vulcan machine gets pointed at the ground inside of the Cobra Temple and begins to activate the lava under the temple. Both the Cobra and Joes escape and go their separate ways. What do you got on this one, George?
I've got a couple of different ones. You know, when they were in the jungle with Rakondo and Rock and Roll was ready to just blaze away and just kill that rhino, you know, Rakondo showed there's more than one way to, I guess, skin a cat. You don't always have to resort to violence to resolve your issue. There's other ways to do it.
Yeah, that's one of mine where Rakondo shows why he is the jungle warfare trooper of the Joe team. He gets them through these traps. He recognizes the traps before somebody steps on something and he's able to get him out of it. I agree that Rakondo's good at what he does. As we mentioned before, he's used a lot in these seven episodes.
I know if I was going to get shot down in the desert or in the jungle, I definitely would want Snake Eyes and Rakondo on my team. They would get you through everything, that's for sure.
Absolutely. This may be one of yours too. It's a fatal fluffy. How is Zartan not affected by the sun at the beginning of the episode, but when he's escaping from the temple, The first thing he says, run it out, is, oh, the sun. I hate the sun. I couldn't understand that. What are your thoughts on that? I didn't quite understand it.
Maybe it was a little cloudier there, but I'm like, it's bright, sunny day. But all of a sudden he's okay with it. I don't get it. Maybe the sun was to his back in the market and he was okay with it. I have no idea, but it didn't make any sense to me.
It was off. I'm like, yeah, okay. I don't know how to explain that one. All right. Since I took one of yours, you got another one?
I've got a couple of them. I see that Cobra, they haven't given up on the whole mind control thing. You know, they're trying those headbands again. They just tweaked them a little bit. You know, their 2.0 version. They seem to work a little bit better, but this was only one person that they were trying it on. That was one thing I had noticed.
Yeah, this time they don't have a big arena with a snake in it, though.
They might have, but they just didn't get to that part of it. They didn't show it.
Right. I'll buy that. A high that I have has to do with the writer, Paul Dini. I'm not sure if you recognize that name or not, but he is most famous for writing and creation of Batman the Animated Series, which morphed into the Superman series, the Batman Beyond, and the two Justice League cartoons, which created this whole big animation universe for, goodness, 15, 16 years. And it's still, every now and then, they dabble back into that. He also, with him writing the Batman Animated Series, created Harley Quinn. This is one of his first writing gigs for animation. I thought that was pretty unique.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Again, you know, you get these guys that they're just trying to make it in the business too. And they had a lot of ideas, you know, that they didn't all mesh with each one. So they would start a new line. Everything was still kind of in its infancy. So they were able to do that.
And there's a couple other writers in these two seasons that we'll recognize and go on to have big careers. Got anything else about Jungle Trap, George?
One last one, and it was just more of an observation that I happened to just catch a real quick glimpse of this morning when I was kind of following up on them, is it was just the jungle, and they were kind of going to pan over to show where the Joes were at. There was a cameo of Freedom. Freedom was there. He just did a flyby. It was just an eagle, but I'm like, hey, there's Freedom. What's he doing there? And then I was like, wait, he wasn't supposed to be there. It was just a regular eagle.
But we're so used to seeing that, that was your first thought, is where's Spirit at? Why is he not here? I get it. Yeah.
Maybe Spirit was there and just Freedom was just doing a little recon, making sure everybody was okay while they were getting caught up.
All right. I think you're up next with Cobra's Creatures.
That I am. Cobra's Creatures, written by Kimmer Ringwald. Ripcord, Mutt, and Junkyard are testing a new parachute technology, but are captured by a Cobra airship before they can land. Cobra, with the assistance of Dr. Lucifer, are working on a high-frequency weapon, also known as High Freak for short. This device is designed to control the mind of any animal or insect on Earth. For payment, Dr. Lucifer is only asking for Cobra to deliver his one true love, Professor Attila, who is in a maximum security prison. For demonstration, Dr. Lucifer uses the High Freak on Junkyard. The device works and Junkyard chases Mutt. Now that the device has been proven to work, Cobra begins to use the High Freak all around the world, causing issues. Meanwhile, Junkyard is chasing down Mutt, who is forced to hurt Junkyard. Cobra Commander finally broadcasts his demands, the release of many scientists and mercenaries, one of which is Professor Attila. In hopes to get into the Cobra base, Scarlet disguises herself as Professor Attila, but Dr. Lucifer figures out Scarlet is an imposter. Scarlet is taken prisoner, where Ripcord and her are attacked by a swarm of spiders. But Scarlet is able to get a message out to G.I. Joe base. Flint sends Snake Eyes and Spirit to rescue them. Meanwhile, in the swamp, Junkyard is still chasing Mutt. Junkyard's hunt is interrupted when he is attacked by an alligator. Mutt instinctively protects Junkyard by wrestling with the alligator. Once Snake Eyes and Spirit rescue Ripcord and Scarlet, the four of them attack Cobra Commander and Dr. Lucifer to destroy the High Freak machine. The remaining Joe team attacks the Cobra base at the same time. The High Freak machine is destroyed just in time before Junkyard attacks Mutt. Dr. Lucifer and Professor Attila get to spend some quality time together in prison.
Thank you, George. There was a lot of moving parts to this episode. The first kind of, I'd almost call it a low, between a low and a fatal fluffy, is Scarlet isn't the female Joe that they should have sent on the mission to impersonate Dr. Attila. Lady J is the one that is the, I don't want to say disguise specialist. That's more Lady J's specialty than Scarlet. I thought that was a little off character, but maybe it was the voice actor that was available at the time, too.
Isn't that one of the skills of CoverGirl as well? A makeup artist or something like that?
She's more of a mechanic, but I can see where she could be used for that, definitely.
You're right. They should have probably used Lady J a little bit more.
Again, not everyone can be used in all of them, so what do you got next, George?
One that I've got is, this kind of rolls off into yours, is where I thought that Scarlet should have done a little bit more recon on Dr. Attila or Professor Attila. Maybe Lady J would have done a little bit more background research on it before she tried to impersonate somebody.
Yeah, because Dr. Lucifer was able to tell right away that this was not his woman.
Yeah, she didn't even make it 20 seconds into it and she already blew her cover. That was terrible. Could have sent Duke in and he would have done better.
Yeah, he would have gotten captured. Scarlet did get captured. Yeah, the way that Dr. Lucifer found out, I was like, yeah, my Professor Attila is not that nice. I'm like, I'm not sure I want that kind of relationship.
Everybody's got their thing, but I don't think that that's what people seek out.
Not usually. Another one I have is when they turned Junkyard on against Mutt. Yeah, I've always been kind of a dog person anyway. We've always had dogs in the house. Even when you and I were younger, there's always dogs in the house. My wife and I have always had dogs. I guess it hit me a little bit harder now because I have a dog that is like bonded to me with Timber. He is like everywhere I go, he's there. I mean, I get home, he's always following me. It's a little bit closer relationship than I've had with any other dog. And this time when I watched this, I'm like, ooh, that would be tough for me to be chased by Timber in a way that he's going to be relentless the way that Mutt was chased by Junkyard. It hit me a little bit different. Maybe I'm just getting old and soft. I don't know.
With that whole thing with the dog, you know, attacking him, I'm like, well, all he's got to do is just distract him long enough and he'll fall asleep because dogs sleep more than they're awake. So keep up the good fight. But yeah, it was definitely hard on him. You know, he wanted to keep him at bay, but he didn't really want to hurt him.
But then when Junkyard was attacked by an alligator, Mutt didn't even think twice about going and helping him. So what else you got?
I did like the part when Snake Eyes and Spirit were being taken captive. You got Timber, and then Freedom's just sitting there riding on Timber's back. You know, like I'm like, that's kind of hokey, but it's pretty adorable.
Well, I'm sure they spend a lot of time together, so they're used to each other, and Freedom can't fly all everywhere, so that was pretty neat. All right, anything else?
I got nothing else on this one.
All right, number 7, the last one. It's called The Funhouse, which was written by Steve Mitchell and Barbara Petty. Cobra's kidnapping a wide range of scientists from around the world. As the Joes are wondering why they're being kidnapped, Cobra Commander contacts the Joe team, demanding $60 billion for the safe return of the scientists. The Joes trace the signal to a location in South America. The Joes assault the Cobra base, splitting into 3 groups in an attempt to find Cobra Commander in the command center to stop the bomb that will destroy the base. But each group soon finds out that the base is filled with funhouse traps, balloons with hallucinating gas, a roller coaster with a shooting gallery, a jack-in-the-box Cobra Commander, and many other carnival traps. Until Flint is the only Joe left, who makes his way to the command center with Cobra Commander, Zartan, and the Baroness. After fighting through the defenses of the command center, Flint finds the bomb controls have been shot up. All he can do is reset the countdown to 3 minutes. All the Joes make their way out of the base and to the Sky Strikers, escaping before the island blows up. But the mission isn't over yet. The Joes attack the Cobra base where Cobra Commander, Zartan, and Baroness are located, and all 3 of them escape before the Joes can capture them and the scientists are rescued. There was a lot going on here with them splitting up into 3 different groups, the interaction between the different characters. But what's one of your high lows or fatal fluffy?
I don't know if this falls under a low. I don't even know where they fall anymore, but it's why was Alpine on this mission and not Recondo? I'm like, it was a jungle mission.
I think a lot of that was because of Bazooka, the interaction between Bazooka and Alpine.
Yeah, that's true. They have that camaraderie. That makes sense.
When Bazooka gets shot, I mean, you could tell the Alpine was devastated.
Yeah, his clumsy buddy. You know, Bazooka is always clumsy, but he's still effective. He gets lucky, I guess, is what you want to call it.
Sometimes I'd rather be lucky than good. Is this the first? We'll have to see if it's the only time that a Joe gets shot in combat, or one of the very few times.
Well, a couple of them get shot in this episode.
Yeah. Yep.
Lady J got shot too.
Yep. I just thought it was odd. And yeah, they definitely take some hits in this episode.
It definitely showed how ineffective that those laser guns were. If they can shoot you and you still get up, more of a stun gun than it is an actual laser gun.
Yeah. These android troopers that were in the funhouse, were these like the first version of the bat?
Yeah, I have the same thing written down. Are they the prototype bats, or they seem to be a little bit tougher than the bats were? But yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
All right. That was mine. What do you got?
Well, another one I have here is when they were like, oh, I want $60 billion. And they're like, $60 billion? Are you kidding me? That was a lot of money back then. It wasn't even realistic. You might as well just ask for the keys to the castle, and rule the world, because that's a lot of money. And then, of course, Alpine just pulls out his credit cards. Oh, we can pay for that. That was kind of funny.
$60 billion was a lot back then. It's a lot now. I don't know what some people are worth, but that's still a lot of money. I heard that. When I was watching, I rewound it. I'm like, did he say billion or million? I actually had rewound it, listened to it for sure. But he said billion. One of my last ones, or my last one. How many of these episodes did Cobra steal or kidnap scientists in? Three? Four?
At least three for sure.
Jungle Trap. They captured Dr. Shakur. And then Cobra's Creatures. Lucifer was there, but they captured all the other scientists to get Professor Attila. And then this one. So three of them. It just seemed like the last three, they all had to deal with kidnapping scientists.
Yeah, I don't know who got captured more, scientists or Duke.
Today it was just the scientists. But
yeah, yep.
Duke's still up on them.
Quite a few times, yes.
Yeah.
On a side note, $60 billion in 85 is now equal to $171 billion.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a lot of money.
A little bit.
Anything else on Funhouse?
Yeah, when was it Baroness, Cobra Commander, and Zartan were escaping? Cobra Commander's in the back seat, but as he was pulling away, he was actually in the front seat of the jet. But who's pointing out the little bits,
The animation errors, yeah. Again, Zartan, true to his character, when the Joes started coming in, he took off. He was looking out for number one. He didn't care about the other two.
He figures if he gets out of there, he's not in the way.
So we've covered these episodes in details. Now let's highlight some of the episodes by picking one of each for the following subjects. Most significant episode. What episode stood out to you the most due to character building, overall story, or world building? George?
Well, I would have to say out of those ones, Funhouse was probably my personal significant. It was just a little different, mildly hokey, but it just showed another version that Cobra, they're bunch of gamers playing their games and using Joes as the pawns.
That was a good one. I like the Jungle Trap one. It really utilized the Rokondo's skills. Snake Eyes was used quite a bit. They'd captured a vehicle, and it just overall, I like the use of in the different locations. Zartan and the Dreadnoks in Egypt, different environments. I really like how that one played out. How about your craziest episode? Which one of these episodes had the craziest moments and plot for you?
Yeah, I was kind of torn between Satellite Down with the whole Primords. It was just kind of a little out there. And the other one was Cobra's Creatures. I'm like, okay, really? You took over all the animals in the world with, I don't buy that. I know it's cartoon. Those were the two that were kind of out there for me.
Yeah, I was going to go with the Satellite Down and Red Rocket's Claire. How Cobra was hiding in plain sight. It kind of made me laugh when they were attacking the restaurants. Cobra troopers in uniform were coming out. Like, nobody noticed them out there. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's like they were patrons, and they were like, oh, okay, we were on coffee break, and now we're getting attacked. We're just going to... Yeah, it was kind of out there. Even though that cartoon was probably my second favorite out of this group. Okay.
I like it. It's a little bit different. Yeah, those two are what, for me, were the kind of craziest ones. All right, and the last one has to do with a specific moment. What is the single most memorable moment from any of the episodes? Again, you can pick a couple if you need to.
Actually, I narrowed it down to one, and that was on Rocket's Red Glare with the cookout. It showed the common public thanking G.I. Joe for what they do and providing the service that they do, keeping everybody safe. It was their way of paying back the way they could. I thought that was a pretty good one.
That was good. It always surprises me how well the public knows the existence of G.I. Joe. in the cartoon. In the comic book, you and I both watched the cartoon before either of us read the comic. So I guess I didn't realize it when I was watching the cartoon as a kid, or how the public knew the G.I. Joe team existed. And then I started reading the comic book, and the public doesn't even know they're around. They don't know how some of this stuff stops. They don't know some of this stuff can even happen. But yeah, I like that they did show the public thanking them. For me, I'm going to go, and this I must be a softie or something, but I'm going to go with in the Cobra's Creatures, when Junkyard was chasing Mutt, and then they finally, Junkyard breaks loose, and they're able to have that moment again.
Yes, that was a good one.
Probably another one with one of your favorites is during the Funhouse. It was kind of a funny moment when Airtight realizes that Dusty shouldn't pop that balloon, and Dusty starts hallucinating, and Airtight has to knock him out, which is not something you want to do, but he's like, hey, he's not going to stop, so I need to do something about it. I thought that was pretty good because Joe team, again, willing to do whatever they need to get the job done. All right. Any other significant moments for you?
No, I'm sure there were some, but that's really all I've got.
This next breakout point, we're going to start keeping count. We're going to call it the Duke Capture Count. So including the three miniseries we've covered on Outpost Episode 3, I would consider that he got captured in all three of those miniseries. In The Mask of Ice, he was captured by himself where he met the slave and he was able to escape. In Revenge of Cobra, he got captured with Snake Eyes. And in the Pyramid of Darkness, he was detained or captured by Zartan on the satellite. So that's three times so far. So how many times did he get captured in the episodes we covered today? I only found one in Cobra Stops the World. Did you see any other ones, George, that you would consider he got captured?
Well, what was the one that he crashed that jet into the mine? Was that Cobra Stops the World? Yeah, it was. That's the only one that I can think of.
All right, so just we're adding one to it today. I'm thinking we'll be adding to it every cartoon episode.
Yeah, you're almost going to have to get a dry erase board just so that we can keep hash marks and add them as we go.
I'll put that on the back wall here. Okay, anything else covering on any of the episodes we've discussed so far or on the episodes today?
No, actually, I don't have anything else. I think I've kind of covered everything.
This is just more for if you thought of anything as we were discussing it.
No, I try not to think any more than I have to. But that way, it makes the day go smoother. What Bazooka does, you know, he just kind of goes with it, and whatever falls in his lap, it happens, you know?
The one that I have includes Bazooka. I don't remember what episode it was, where at the end of it, Lady J mentioned something about walking on a moonlit beach. Was it Bazooka that jumped up first? Yeah, Bazooka suggested it first, and then Alpine jumped in, and Flint mentioned that if you guys are going to do that, you better get ready for some bathroom duty.
I remember that. And then Alpine's like, oh, it looks like I'm stuck with you again.
There's a couple other times when Flint and Lady J kind of showed their emotions for each other. And then as well as Scarlet and Duke a couple times also. I thought that was neat. But for the record, as Jared and I discussed previously, I do not condone Duke and Scarlet being together. It's got to be Snake Eyes and Scarlet. That's just from the comics, but that's just me.
Yeah, that's definitely, I've heard of that and that's how it ends up. I guess we all have our former lovers before we get with who we're for, so.
So, listeners, give us your thoughts on what your favorite episode was, your craziest episode, your most memorable moment from any episode. Share that on YouTube, any podcatcher, or on Facebook. Now, we're going to move on to our final segment. We call Military Surplus.
Now I know.
And knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe.
Here at the Outpost, on each episode, besides discussing the toys, comics, and cartoons of the highlighted year, we discuss a peripheral item related to G.I. Joe. This episode, we are going to discuss the many figure carrying cases. Once again, we'll be using yojo.com and 3djoes.com for our information. I found five collector's cases that we're going to discuss, each coming out a few years from each other, from 1982 to 1993. All right, the first one is from 1982, and it's the one that most people recognize with the comic art from G.I. Joe issue number one. There's one difference. They got Flash jumping off the front instead of Grunt or Hawk, with original 13 around the Mobat, a couple running in front, a couple on. And it's just a black case with that image on it. That's a pretty basic carrying case. Have you seen this image before, George?
I have, and every once in a while I stumble across them. They're usually not in the greatest of shape whenever I see them, so I just kind of pass them up. Plus, I never know if that's something that you're actually looking for, so I don't kind of pursue that stuff, but I have seen this.
I've got a Joe one right now, a Masters of the Universe one, a GoBot one. I really don't have room for them, so they're going to be something I flip. I appreciate them, but there's only so much room that I have and so much room to put stuff. So, yeah, this one's got the classic art. I like the art on it. Some of the ones we're going to discuss are not the best art. Let me rephrase that. Art that I appreciate. All right, any thoughts on this?
So did they just get stuck right behind these little elastic straps, or are they not elastic? Are they just plastic? Did they all have their own little cubby to stick? You know, kind of like the Star Wars ones where they all had their own little cubby to go in, but this one doesn't look like it has that.
If you look on the left-hand side of that bottom image, those are all stickers with their names on them.
Okay. Okay. So the literature covers up where they're actually going to be sitting. I see the kind of diagram on it. So I guess they did have their own little hole to sit in.
Yeah. If you look on the right-hand side there on the bottom, it looks like they show places for them. So
little grids and stuff. Yeah.
It's one of the more recognizable display cases, for me at least. I mentioned where we found a lot of these at, but if you go on yojo.com to the collectibles archive area, you'll find the carrying cases in that list. Next one, this one held 24 action figures, whereas the previous one only held 12. So you got twice as many. The outside of it is very cartoon looking, more so than the previous one. Some of the colors are off. Rakondo's doesn't look like Rakondo.
I want to say this might be the one that I've seen more of than the other one. Because this one's more like a suitcase, right? It's got a little handle at the top, and it's soft-sided. Yep.
Usually when they find them, they're in pretty rough condition because they are soft.
Well, even this one's in pretty rough condition.
Yeah.
The one that's in the picture.
I agree. This is probably a more common one that we see. It's got a red background. It includes a lot of the figures. You can tell who they are. Gung-Ho, Cover Girl, Duke, Rakondo.
Who's the one on the motorcycle on the left? Is that Tunnel Rat?
I think that's Dusty.
Is it? Is
that Dusty with his cloth off the helmet back there?
It's possible.
And I don't know who that is that's running in front of the tank.
Flash Gordon.
Maybe. All right, let's move on to the next one, which is from
1986.
And this one, would you call this a carrying case or more of a display item?
I'd say it's more of a display item. Yes. I mean, just because it's got a carrying handle doesn't mean anything. I've never seen this one before.
Yeah. I've never seen it. I didn't even know. I mean, we were collecting pretty actively figures in 86.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw this. Now, it's funny. It was released in 86, but on the package, there's no 1986 characters on it. They're all 84 and 85.
Yep.
That's odd. This one will hold up to 20 figures. And what we're looking at is it's basically an American flag. It's even got a little bit of curve to it, you know, some waves in it to make it look like it's flowing in the breeze. But it's the American flag with, I don't know if you remember, like in the late 80s, early 90s, they tried to use clips to keep the figures in the vehicles.
It shows you the clips that they were using. It just slides onto the flag itself, and then it just kind of clips them right in the chest. They would have been better off just having like a backpack post to plugging in their back.
Yeah. You look at the picture of the back of the showcase, and it's got places where you can
hang it
on the wall.
Yep.
So, but it does have a handle, so I guess it's a carrying case. But me, I'm like you, it's more of a showcase. Unique, but I have never seen one.
No. Now we will.
Okay, the next one is from 1992, and they went back to the hard plastic, similar to the 82 one. This one has artwork from, of course, the figures of that year, because that's who they're trying to sell. Looks like it was pretty much taken right off the card art for the figures. Looking at Duke riding his missile there. This is, again, hard plastic. I've seen more of these than any of the other ones at shows.
I wonder why that is.
I think they held up better, and they're, 8, 10 years?
That's true. They're much newer. Yep.
They don't show the inside, so I'm not sure
how the configuration is.
All right, here's something interesting. Reading down here, the case was redone in green and available for mail order as part of the G.I. Joe collector's kit. So Hasbro got some good reuse out of it.
Yeah, they just slapped another sticker on the front and use it yep. for that. Interesting. Yep.
The last one is from 1993. And this is okay. that collector's kit that they were talking about from the previous one.
Oh, the mail-in. Okay.
Just put a new sticker on it. The collector's kit that was packaged inside this box came with a mystery figure with file card, which was a hooded Cobra Commander, two plastic trees of black weapons, a collector's book, and a pack of G.I. Joe trading cards. Kit was sold for $19.95 plus four flag points. So the box itself has two cardboard dividers that decent reuse, came with some stuff other than just a carrying case. Pretty basic collector's case. I have seen that art before on a book with a list of G.I. Joe figures from up to that point. Of these five that we covered, George, which one is your favorite?
Oh, out of all of them, I'd have to say, I guess the very first one is the one I like the most. It shows the figures on it. I definitely like the first one the most. It seems like they put the most time and effort into getting you a nice case.
Yeah, I'm with you. My favorite was the one from 1982. I like the art better. Just if I was to buy one and keep one, it would be that one there. And on a side note, that is the art that Carson Metaxas from 3DJoes.com used for the slipcase cover for the art of collecting G.I. Joe, which if you're a Joe collector and you don't have that yet, you better get it soon because I'm not sure how many more copies they have. But as of right now, they're still available on 3DJoes.com. It's that 20-pound book that goes over from 1982 to 1994. All the figures, all the vehicles, all the board games, inserts, all that stuff. I still haven't looked at every page of it yet. For a little over a month.
Yeah, I quickly thumbed through that book. It's a pretty cool book.
Very extensive. All right. Any closing thoughts on anything we talked about, George?
No, there's not much else that I can think of that we haven't already covered.
The only thing I got to say, the single episodes that we talked about today is pretty much the common formula that they use. You got some crazy ones, some silly ones, but overall, I'd like to find the good in all of them. I think we did. I like that you bring up some of the stuff that other people wouldn't notice because of your distance you've had. And you're looking at it going, what the heck? Why is that? And I wouldn't have caught some of that, but I love it that we have the differing opinions and differing way to look at things. So, but the formula is pretty similar going forward. There's some two-parters, I think, that are coming up, which are really good. As far as stuff today, I think we've covered it all. In closing, first of all, George, thank you for joining me again. It was a great time, even though we spent all day yesterday together. Thanks for sitting down and having a couple more hours with me and to go over these amazing cartoons. And if our listeners wanted to contact you, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Facebook at George Meal, or also you can find me at Meals, Steals, and Deals, or you can just contact Jim, and if it's something you're looking for and he's looking for it, he's going to get first dibs on it anyway. So I don't let anything go without his green light. But yeah, that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Yeah, that gets me in trouble sometimes too. You can find me on Facebook as Jim Meal, J-I-M-M-I-E-L. Also on Facebook, Timbers Toys and Customs, where I post some of the shows I'm going to be at with my what I'm selling, some of the Joe items that are there are people interested in, similar to the book for 3djoes.com, and some Joe-related stuff, some of the customs I'm doing. But also on X, I am Jim the Joe Junkie. I want to thank everyone at the Long Box Crusade Network for adding G.I. Joe Outpost to their extensive line of shows. Take a listen to all the other shows that are on the Long Box Crusade on any podcatcher or on YouTube. And if you like what you hear, go to Patreon and become a Crusader Club member where you get all the access. Join us next time where we will be discussing the sub-teams of the toy line, such as Python Patrol, Tiger Force, Slaughter's Marauders, Battle Force 2000. This is because, as we stated in the beginning and on the last comic book episode, we are splitting the years up into two segments. And in order to get the comic books and the toys to line up, we are going to place this, a special episode in. So the comics and the toys are lined up. Until next time,
Yo Joe.
The music themes for this show are done by musical genius Joe November. Please check out his SoundCloud at joseflin99. That's J-O-S-E-F-L-I-N-99. You will not regret it.